Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle. Joining me to my left, Greg Lenz.
Chris, how are you, buddy?
I.e. Adolf. showed up with a Starbucks coffee in his hand, and on the red cup is written Adolf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they won't do Jesus, but they'll sure as hell put Hitler on there.
And then Brett Bittner joins us, head of the Advocates for Self-Government, the executive director of that organization, former elected libertarian twice. Well, appointed once, elected...
elected twice.
Oh, okay. All right. Look at you. Talk real close into that microphone for me.
All right. No problem.
Yeah. So I am... I'm glad that Greg has his Adolf cup. You are quickly being associated, and I'm sorry, everybody. I am tired as all get out today, so my voice is a little low.
What made you so tired? What were you doing last evening?
I don't want to talk about it.
That's a nice shirt.
So I was, yeah, you like this? I was at the International Video Cat Festival. No, I think it's the Internet Video Cat Festival. Mittens, get out of my face. Come on. As I say this, my cat is rubbing her asshole right on my nose, basically. That is like the highest honor in catdom. Turn around, put your ass their asshole right in your face.
Only Aaron Ewart and your cat do that to you.
So I bought a special shirt.
It is quite attractive.
It is essentially a kitty with a kitty that is coming out of the water like the Kraken attacking an
Moby Pussy.
So if you want to check it out, go to my Instagram or my Facebook, C Spangle on Instagram, and you can check that out. mutual friend of ours, Greg Lenz,
a fellow Plainfield graduate,
right? Ashley Cost, she and I went together, and she got a cat in space eating pizza with rainbows around it. So Greg frequently taunts her as well, so we posted a photo up there together and said, "Photoshop this bitch." So and
you called me out.
I did,
and I like wasn't expecting it because I was actually trying to get to Black Acre before Brett left Liberty and Chill, and then I saw it and I was like, "All right, I need 15 minutes because I need something. Like I can't just be trolled this bad and let it go 24 hours before responding." It was a crisis moment and it needed to be handled immediately
because you know people are watching to see what you're gonna do.
You called me out publicly.
I said, "Come at me, bro."
Deservedly so.
That's true.
But part of it was that it's such a ridiculous. Our shirts were so ridiculous that.
You wore it in public today when you went shopping?
You didn't even need to, like, Photoshop anything. No, yeah, I just put it right back on. It didn't smell or anything, so I put it back on. I put on some gym shorts, got on my sandals, and went over to the Target.
Everybody to get an idea of what it was like outside, it's snowing yeah, it's here.
The first snow, yeah, first snow an inch, and I'm rolling around in my flip-flops and... Listen, when you need chocolate chip cookies, nasal spray, and cheese, you got to go to the Target, all right?
No
and
bacon.
And he forgot the bacon.
I forgot bacon.
I've only been badgering him about it for 2 days.
And he asked you to bring it.
Right.
Yeah.
What, you're the guest.
What a host.
And then I went back over to the Qdoba, which that's what that tasted like, and had some nice Qdoba, and I've enjoyed some chocolate chip cookies. And
did you add a U?
What?
Qdoba? Qdoba.
Is that not how
Qdoba?
Qdoba?
Mim?
Chipotle? So, I don't know. Listen, my diet consists of Chipotle and Qdoba. So, that's basically it.
So, you're mixing the GMOs and the non-GMOs?
I know. But if there's not a Chipotle around here. The Chipotle is over by the Fresh Time Organic Market, and that's across town. That's
one of the closest ones to me.
I know. And so, I've got to go 10 minutes for my Chipotle, or I've got to go right across the street to the Qdoba.
What about your Ben Carson pyramid grain containers?
I could make food, but I was really feeling... I'm just tired. Like, I went out literally every night this week. I think I got no more than 4 or 5 hours of sleep every night. I didn't get a nap. What did I do this week? I mean, literally, it's been probably 2 weeks since I've just had a night where I just stayed in and did nothing. So, I've been going hard. Hard in the paint, as the kids say. So, it kind of caught up with me today, and I could barely get out of bed. Because I'm 32 now. I'm not spry. Not spry like Nuna. So, for those of you who don't know, good friends of the show, Tyler and Aaron, their grandmother's name is Nuna. and Nuna is spry. So anyways,
I don't even know what to say.
No, nah, don't say anything.
It's now, okay. is there a pug internet festival?
Not that I'm aware of.
That seems like a crime, something it is, Missouri kids would protest over.
Yeah, well, you know, but there is quite the Instagram following for pugs, as I have found out now that my pug has her own Instagram.
Or as I like to call them, God's little mistakes.
Oh, that's just so wrong. You know how cute she is. Yeah, exactly. She makes a lot more interesting noises than that, too. I really wish I had a decoder so that I knew what they meant.
Is it hashtag pugs of Instagram?
There are a whole bunch.
Are there?
Yeah. Today it was a pugsicle because we went outside in the snow. So she was a pugsicle.
Brett's married, by the way.
Well, that's common law.
Brett has a significant other he's committed to.
Yes.
Right. They've been together like 12 years, but they will not get married.
Well, I don't want the state getting into that.
Mm-hmm.
He's legit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not into threesomes that way.
Yeah. Alpha male, that's what he is. So does like Crystal want to get married and you just won't?
No, it's a mutually agreed upon decision. She's probably feel stronger about it than I do.
It's a good man. So, like, if you two break up after having been together 12 years, like, is there, you just separate your stuff?
Yeah, pretty much.
She'd technically have to go to the state in order to get any settlement.
Right.
So that's, man, you really have everything set up.
Yeah.
You're a hell of a schemer, Bittner.
Well, and, you know, some people haven't changed their driver's licenses to here yet, so she wouldn't even have standing.
Nice.
Really? Yeah. And you did?
Well, I did because it's important insurance for me to vote.
He has thought this out.
Yeah, no, I know. I
have to register cars,
right?
I have to sign leases.
Oh, sorry, honey, I forgot to register your car.
No.
Did not mean to register your driver's license.
Don't worry, I'll have Greg Photoshop it. It'll be fine.
Exactly. That's what I told her.
So you moved here from Georgia.
Yes.
But long story short, before we moved to Georgia, the Internet Cat Festival coming to a town near you. It's in 200 cities. A lot of fun. 70 minutes of cat videos. Let me tell you, if you are a single male and you like awkward, introverted women, such as I do, the Internet Cat Festival is for you. It is nothing but, it was 75% female, because every girl was there with her best friend. And this is not a joke. I'm not exaggerating. So
it would not have been a good place for a single guy about town to go and scout for potential.
No, it would have been the perfect place.
No, but these women go to cat festivals. Internet cat festivals. They're like, so they're like
just videos of cats, not real cats.
Yeah, they're forum cat people.
So do
cats.
I.
Well,
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah. No, you just made a meme about it on my Facebook last night. It was so funny. Ashley, we're driving back, and we're sitting in the Taco Bell line, and I go, you're checking your phone a lot, like you're... Is there like an emergency? It's uncharacteristic of you to look down at your phone like this much. Are you getting text messages? She goes, no, I'm just looking at all the likes. Like, that's what happens when you get memed. You get memed by Greg.
You're running for, what's the current position you're running for? City council?
Nothing.
Or that's your intent?
I have no intent.
Well, you have a public page.
Yeah, it's as the executive director of the Advocates and all the stuff that I do that's pro-liberty.
Yeah,
he was on the school board.
Making that.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that I'll ever run again, but...
No.
You know, it was what it was, and it showed that somebody who's dedicated, that is caring about their community, can win an election regardless of how their political philosophy is portrayed by their opponents in the media.
Where and what were you elected to?
The Marietta City School Board in Marietta, Georgia. It's a town of about 58,000 people northwest of Atlanta. It's right where the new Braves Stadium is going to be going in 2017.
Now, did you help bring the Braves Stadium? What kind of graph did you get for that?
I definitely did not. In fact, I was the first person on television against the stadium because it was quite the boondoggle for taxpayers.
Nothing like subsidizing billionaires and increasing their net worth.
You know, some of the biggest welfare queens out there wear suits, man.
Totally.
Jim Irsay, like, he was not in the Forbes 500. All of a sudden, he scores the New Deal of Lucas Oil. Boom.
Yeah. When here in Indianapolis, if you hold an event in Lucas Oil Stadium that is not football related, up to $3 million a year, he gets revenue on all the concessions. He gets revenue on all the events that are held in Lucas Oil Stadium. He doesn't own the stadium. He owns the Colts. But he gets revenue from the concessions for a monster truck rally, for instance.
Hey, what's a couple million between cronies?
Right.
And it's a hostage situation. He takes his NFL team, says, "Oh, I love this community, Chuck Strong. I can't wait to do all these, you know, socially responsible things. If you ever don't give me half the revenue, I'm out."
Right. And so when Minneapolis needed a new stadium, he went up there and was in all the papers saying, you know, it's great for the city, and if you don't leave, they're going to go to L.A. You need to build us a stadium. That's going on. And so Ursay really kind of paved the road for all these publicly funded stadiums.
Well, they were around a long time before Ursay.
Sure.
He's been a very big proponent.
Right. So
He's mastered the craft.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of made it.
Jerry Jones did a pretty good job in Arlington.
That's amazing.
Listen, blues was around a long time, but you know, Jimi Hendrix made it mainstream. Jimmy Ursay is a guy who made himself a billionaire off the back of the teams and holding up taxpayers. The taxpayers here in Indianapolis, it was one of the first stadiums, built the Hoosier Dome back in 82. Mayor Hudnut said, "Hey, we need to build a..." Mittens, come on. You got to get out of here. We're trying to do a show here, and you're rubbing up against the microphone in my face. Go up against Brett's. And so, now she's back. So anyways, we built the Hoosier Dome in hopes of drawing a team, possibly the Baltimore Colts, to Indianapolis. So Mayor Hudnut and the city built it. And that was in 1982. When they tore down the Hoosier Dome, the Indiana and Indianapolis taxpayers had not even touched the principal of the loan. They had only paid interest.
I did not, and they rolled it in?
And they rolled it into Lucas Oil Stadium. And we,
oh my.
Yeah, and so...
So luckily, the taxpayers of Indianapolis get to continue to pay for that.
You're continuing to pay for the Hoosier Dome.
For the interest.
That I've never even been in.
If you go to...
I've never been inside of.
You buy any food or beverage, and then they held all the local surrounding counties hostage, and only... so all the counties that touch Marion County, which is basically Indianapolis and Marion County, are interchangeable. If you are in any county other than Morgan County, which said F you, because they barely share any border with
Mars
Marion.
Hill, and they'd rather not.
Right. And, but the rest of the counties were forced to increase their food and beverage tax and their innkeeper's tax. So if you stay in a hotel or go to a restaurant or a bar anywhere in Indianapolis, you pay 7% tax, and innkeeper's tax was raised as well. So, to pay for Lucas Oil Stadium and the convention business. You know, Indianapolis, for instance, has a very long history of being Indian O-Place and Naptown. And in the 80s, in the 70s and 80s, if you went to the Circle, you could buy hookers and crack. Like, the city that people that are 30, like us, if you're on the Circle, it is... Indianapolis is a great downtown. And you know what? To be fair to Hudnut and... you know, people like Lugar, who was mayor, Dick Lugar, who was a senator for a long time here in Indiana. He was a mayor in the late 60s, early 70s, and he passed through Unigov and sort of set the template. And then Hudnut, Goldsmith, Peterson, Ballard all have worked hard to make the city core an attractive place for business, residents, shopping, restaurants. But when you went downtown, it was sort of like downtown Dayton now is like this crap hole, and nobody goes downtown to downtown Dayton. But Indianapolis has this centralized area where everything is like right in a 20 block radius of the monuments. And they built a mall. They tore down Market Square Arena and built Bankers Life Fieldhouse. They built Lucas Oil Stadium, the convention center, and so it's a great place for conventions. But we've paid a lot of money for all that, and we've never paid interest on any of it. So just and that's what Ursay played on. He's like, you know, you lose the Colts, then you lose what makes Indianapolis special, and you're going to go back to Indian O-Place, and there'll be hookers and crack on the Circle again.
He's basically saying he made Indy great again, and if he leaves,
right,
Indy will no longer be great again.
Right. Meanwhile, he's buying hookers and crack on the Circle. Yeah. So, but Yeah, I mean, the publicly funded stadiums, I mean, that argument, it just really took off, and Ursae really helped launch it. So, Brett, it is snowing out.
Yes.
And you are from Atlanta.
Yes.
This is a dusting. There's a little bit of sticking to the ground and the trees.
This shuts down the entire state of Georgia.
Really?
Except for football.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it doesn't snow this early, you know.
Right.
It snows in February or March.
Why?
If it snows.
Like, it's not even sticking to the trees. Well, how does it shut down a whole state?
Well, here it's not sticking to the trees, but in my neighborhood it was sticking to the streets.
Yeah, people are making
enough. And there's no equipment. There are no salt trucks. There are no snow plows. There are no enterprising individuals that have a snow blade on the front of their Chevy 1500 to go and plow the streets or a parking lot or whatever. It just falls, and people are just stuck with it until it goes away.
And they don't
occasionally
have...
we'll borrow some from Tennessee.
Hmm.
Some of the mountainous northern counties will borrow that a little earlier because they don't have to worry about interstates and things like that. They're just getting county roads cleared.
Right.
Is that up by like Stone Mountain?
No, Stone Mountain's east of the city.
Oh, is it east of Atlanta? No way.
Yeah,
I've always heard that's an awesome place.
So,
as a park, yes. As a town, not so much.
No.
Right.
It's in DeKalb County, which is probably one of the worst in the metro area in terms of crime and corruption in government. And
all Democrats on the city council?
No. Oh, they've drawn lines to make sure that there will be a Republican minority.
That's an outrage. I've never heard of anything like this.
And a local Republican's really just a Democrat nationally.
For the most part. And you take a look at, I believe it, they're on their third CEO, which is their county commission chair type person. But they're on their third CEO who has either been to jail,
ooh,
under investigation by the GBI or FBI. They're considering... Or the governor of Georgia is considering whether or not to abolish the position, and force the county to rewrite their charter.
Wow!
But then the park's actually worth going to.
Oh, Stone Mountain Park is beautiful. You know, if you can get past the Confederate flag and all of the old time racism,
the generals that are carved into the mountain that fought to keep people in slavery, that whole thing.
Right. Well, yeah, only two of them are generals. You have Lee and you have Jackson, and then you also have Jefferson Davis.
Okay.
Former president of the
Great American. not.
There are a few gentlemen from the Confederacy that are prominently displayed on the mountain, but
So obviously racism isn't racism wasn't as big of a deal 2 years ago as it is now, right, Brett? So, how was there a movement back then? You know, really, it seems like Ferguson in the last 8 years. I don't know if it's just we're talking about racism and the experiences of Black Americans more, or if we're just more of a sensitive culture and South Park has it nailed, but. So when you back in your day when you lived in Georgia, was Stone Mountain an issue down there?
Every once in a while, you'd have something pop up locally where I would say once a year there would be something that popped up on the news and it would make its 2 or 3 day run and then it would be over and
right.
Then 360 something days later it would come back and
right.
Usually it had a lot to do. They tried to time things like that around the biggest event at Stone Mountain, which is the laser show happening at the 4th of July, where when they have some of their biggest audience that shows up there.
Gotcha.
So it was one of those things where it would be a reminder to people who were particularly sensitive to racial issues that, hey, maybe Stone Mountain isn't the place to spend 4th of July.
Right.
Does seem like quite the paradox to go celebrate 4th of July at a...
Well, you know, it is a state that still has Confederate Memorial Day, and...
Now, do you guys fly the state, or the Confederate flag, like South Carolina did?
Georgia has not. That was actually a major point of contention during Governor Roy Barnes's administration in 2002. He made the... or that was when his administration ended. He made the promise that he would get rid of the battle flag, which was the 1955 flag,
mm-hmm.
And that lasted until 2002. There were a couple There's an interim flag, and then the flag that currently flies, which is just three bars and the state seal.
Now you walked in wearing a Georgia Tech hat, Georgia Tech t-shirt, Georgia Tech shoes. So clearly you're from Georgia. Now, what is your opinion of the Confederate flag?
You know, I understand it from a historical aspect. Having grown up there, I understand people wanting to preserve a bit of their history. But I also grew up in an area that had a lot of racial minorities, and I understand their issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the government should fly it. But I also don't think that you should be penalizing individuals from a governmental level for flying it. Now,
right.
If an individual takes issue with an individual flying it or a group of individuals flying it, then, you know, you have to take responsibility for the freedoms that you have.
That's, sure.
That's the corollary that comes from having the freedoms that we do.
And in a free country, you're going to have people being pissed off and offended.
As I was when you described my attire. Yes.
So next week, how bad are your Georgia Tech
Yellow Jackets?
Your Yellow Jackets, your Wasps, how bad are they going to beat the Bulldogs, huh?
Well,
you going to kick the Bulldogs' ass, right, Red?
They're not mine, and as with any rivalry game, I anticipate that it will be a spirited example of what we call good old clean. Wait, no, it's
fashion
good,
racism.
Clean,
you're right, Brett.
Old fashioned hate.
Oh, okay.
Between the two schools, it's a tradition every year that the game is played the Saturday after Thanksgiving. It is a wonderful time, and I fully anticipate that the gentleman wearing the silver breeches that will run into Grant Field at Georgia Tech and run those Yellow Jackets out of town.
So how about your Yellow Jackets quarterback? Isn't that guy great? How about your quarterback, huh?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you much about him.
I love the Georgia Tech coach. What about you?
I actually do, and that's who I want IU to hire.
Because you want the option offense.
We don't win with anything else. We might as well be different.
Now, Brett went to Georgia and is wearing Bulldogs outfit, so I'm rustling his jimmies, as the
just
kids
a little
like
bit.
To say.
Just a little bit.
Now, you work with Chloe Anagnos. She is your employee, and yet she still cheers for Alabama inexplicably.
Well, you know.
Because she's never been to Alabama, but she must have dated some guy who was into Alabama, because that's why girls like those teams, right?
Youthful indiscretion. I'm sure.
Right. I have been rustling her jimmies.
You have been. You had like full-scale Operation Chaos going for her and then tried to suck me into it.
So,
well, and I've helped stoke the fires on the other side, which has made it a lot of fun.
So Chloe is 23, and she is blonde and a beauty queen and Miss Ball State and is a great kid. And she has a 19-year-old sister that is now a freshman at Ball State.
Yes, she does.
And so I started asking, like, hey, is your sister single? She's like, ew, that's gross. You're 32. Stop it. And then she thought about it, and she's like,
hey, dude,
maybe
it's
I
not within the window.
And then
she's outside the half your age plus seven.
Right.
Just saying.
And so I said, and then she kind of thought about it. She goes, well, I guess I could set you two up. And I was like, oh, game on. So, like, I started friending her sister on all the social networks. Somehow, I don't even know how the technology worked in my favor. The girl showed up in my Snapchat, and I was able to add her on Snapchat.
Oh, my God.
I don't even have her phone number. I don't know how it happened, but it just happened. And
didn't have her phone number.
I don't have her phone number, no. And so it just, like, it popped up. And so I added her on Instagram and then Twitter. And then Facebook, and then once I got to Snapchat, Chloe was in full-scale panic.
As well she should be.
Yeah. And so so I started sliding in them DMs to Little Anagnos and started talking to her, and nothing like romantic or anything, but just saying, like, hey.
Have you heard my podcast?
No.
Do you want to be on a podcast?
Help me troll your sister. Let's start. So, like, in a week, you're going to say we're going on a date. And then a week or two later, you're going to say that you really like me. And then a week or three later, you're going to say, I think it's Facebook official. Like, it was going to be a long-term siege of little Chloe Anagnos. And the 19-year-old sister screwed it up. You sent me a screenshot of a text from her sister. And today, I told her, email Chloe and say that you're going to need to borrow the car because Chris wants you to come down and do the podcast, and then we're going to go on a date. And she goes, okay, I'll do that. messages sent. Spangle wants me to borrow the car. I was like, oh, it's you ruined it. I messaged her. I was like, you ruined it in one text.
Millennials ruin everything.
Yeah.
They literally, there's nothing they can't ruin.
I don't even think she's a millennial. I think she's the generation before. She's not even in our generation.
Oh, really? Yeah, so she's 19. Like an echo millennial?
Yeah. She's 19. So,
well, I'm sure they'll be worse.
So I just came clean and I said, Chloe, I've enlisted Greg and Brett's been helping and your sister and I. We had a full 2-month plan. To con, but
nah. A surge, if you will.
Yeah, it was a good time to end the joke, but personally and professionally. So, but she, like, I think she legitimately believed that Kat and, well, that the girl and I were going to go out. So,
well, you know, nothing's final.
Quit the trolling. So.
Well, she's a political science major at Ball State, correct?
Who?
Kat.
Oh, I have no idea.
I think she is, because I think Chloe said that. And Chloe was.
Right, yeah.
So is Chloe a millennial at 23?
Yes.
Yeah, she would be.
So she's a millennial.
Yeah, she's like the end and I'm the beginning.
Okay. So why have they not gone to Ball State and demanded a diversity chair be inserted and a council on anti-oppression training be inserted?
I think Chloe should lead that up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's
as former president of the student body, she may have some sway.
Yeah, I mean, I am. Are you not baffled about all? I mean, and now it's like snowballed. Yale
snowball, really? How racist?
Oh gosh, I was going to say sludge ball, but that'd be more offensive.
No, I mean, it really is amazing. Like, what
Brown just instituted anti-oppression training for faculty and staff at
right.
the demand of the student body at another Dartmouth. Their library was raided by protesters. And they were screaming hateful obscenities at the kids who didn't join the protest. And Dartmouth's historically conservative. That's where the guy that does all those documentaries, Indian guy.
Dinesh D'Souza?
Yeah, that's Dinesh where he D'Souza. Went.
Oh, yeah. That's also where Animal House was filmed. That's what I know about Dartmouth.
Mm-hmm. That's about all I know, too.
My dad was admitted to Dartmouth, and so was my brother-in-law. That's all I know about Dartmouth.
Yeah. I mean, awesome school, but historically conservative.
Yep.
And you're just seeing...
And Princeton.
Yeah, and so...
Princeton,
Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson, which, Democratic president, progressive, hero of the left.
Literally the greatest American social planner in history.
Right.
Who also showed the first movie in the White House, which was Birth of a Nation.
Which is the most racist piece of shit movie I've ever seen in my life. Greg loves it. And, like, I watched it. I couldn't even believe how racist
it was. Oh, it's horrible.
Wilson resegregated the military... so yeah, he's a real racist piece of crap, and I'm like, part of me has mixed feelings about it because I hate everything about Woodrow Wilson. I hate everything he stood for. He was a complete racist.
I mean, the League of Nations was. I mean, that's the predecessor to the United Nations, and that's his brainchild.
Right. So I agree with him on absolutely nothing, but then again, I also am uncomfortable with us erasing history.
Which is why I kind of want to bring it up, because that touches on the Confederate flag thing.
Right. It's history exists whether you want it to or not, and so erasing history, and you could make the argument by taking him off of the Princeton Hall and erasing Woodrow Wilson, the former president of Princeton, and then became president from that position. I think he's the only university president to go from university president right to president.
Yeah, he was never an elected official until that.
The guy... is part of history and serves a purpose in lessons of what we can learn and how we can do differently. And pretending that certain histories in America don't exist is a fool's errand to me. I mean, if you don't want to honor him, that's one argument that I completely understand, and I'm with you. But I get the feeling from the people that want to take down the Woodrow Wilson stuff or the Confederate flag or completely blast the side of Stone Mountain and ruin those carvings... they don't want the history to exist or ever be talked about again, as if erasing our racist past is going to ensure that there is no racist future, when in my mind it's the complete opposite. You have to talk about this stuff. You have to talk about why these things are wrong, and ignoring certain things, ignorance just means that you fall into those same patterns as opposed to talking about certain things.
And when you talk about them, you have the opportunity to minimize their impact.
Right.
You can talk about how wrong some of those things were. you can talk about where what we've learned from that, and you can really minimize their impact going forward. And I think that, unfortunately, by erasing a lot of these things, we're not going to have those conversations, and it's still going to be a prevalent issue going forward.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also a movement of, like, you look at Woodrow Wilson there, and you don't teach it in class. You need to erase it and censor it from history to protect, or not, you know, they're more worried about it, such a thing ever happening again, which, honestly, in today's world, I would have felt the same way until I've seen the reaction to Muslim refugees in Europe, and that makes me wonder if horrid atrocities can't happen again given the exact same circumstances. But, you know, if you don't teach people critical thinking, if you don't take an opinion or look at Woodrow Wilson and give him a blank slate and then force a student to learn and critique him and analyze him, they don't have that ability. So it's just the assumption. Well, of course, that's absurd. He's, you know, wrong. And I think you see this in the media more so than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. There's never an actual analysis of anything that doesn't already come with a standard assumption based on the news network it's from. Mm-hmm. On Fox, it's the brown. We have to bomb the brownies. On the left, it's all cops shoot black people.
Right.
You know, and there's never a challenge to that assumption that creates an entire narrative and has enough momentum, it's going downhill to the point Gallup released polling results yesterday that said 40% of millennials want to curtail free speech or don't believe in free speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's curtailing free speech, and it's the highest percentage they've ever polled in terms of limiting what people can say and can do in the name of free speech.
But the problem is you can limit free speech, but people want free speech limited
for others,
but they don't want their free speech limited.
Right.
You know, it's just like the Christian conservatives, like we talked about in the last episode, you know, people don't want the left to be able to say whatever they want, but the guy wants unfettered free speech. Political correctness is stupid. And as a result, he wants to force Starbucks to put Christmas on the coffee cup.
Right.
You know, like Starbucks can't have free speech. You know, it's ridiculous. It's outrageous.
And granted, yeah, and I think you're seeing this, though. It's actually starting to show up because Chloe recently went to Washington, D.C., and she did the Arlington National Cemetery. Mm-hmm. One of those little facts that's forgotten to history is that is Robert E. Lee's abandoned plantation.
Yep. Right.
And his ancestors successfully sued the United States for the seizure of property. And you're hard-pressed to find an American history student that would even be aware of that because of the erasure of Robert E. Lee from history, from the, you know, the dialogue of American history.
Well, from most of the states.
Why do you think Woodrow Wilson, one of the reasons a guy like Woodrow Wilson is on the side of a building, nobody talks about the fact that he was an absolute horrid racist. I mean, he grew up in Atlanta during the Civil War and saw Civil War soldiers marching off to war. You know, he grew up in the South when they were fighting over slavery. So it's not like he had progressive attitudes. We don't talk about Woodrow Wilson's attitudes when it comes to eugenics and wanting to like people like Margaret Sanger. I mean, she's a great example of somebody who the history of Planned Parenthood has been erased.
How dare you talk about our founding?
Right. I mean,
how dare you?
Margaret Sanger founded Planned Parenthood to kill more black people because that would help society. George Bernard Shaw, all these early progressives of the 20th century, we have liberals who proudly proclaim progressivism in that vein without knowing the true roots of progressivism. You know, it's not just about racial and social equality. It's racial and social equality after you kill certain people.
And that's the terrible thing about progressivism is it's not based on any foundation. It's whatever the status quo or the intelligentsia think is the best social policy or whatever that destination they're trying to march towards. That is what progressivism is. It doesn't have like a set of ideals. And that's why you have, you know, quotes like JFK. Before Hitler was the Führer and committing the Holocaust, before this was all public knowledge, JFK refers to him and says that Hitler will probably go down in history and be remembered as one of its greatest men because of the march towards progress, of a new society, of rebuilding a proud nation and centralizing.
Right.
And the danger is when that power becomes centralized, then people, it's people flock to it, people become proud, and they'll blindly follow it down the hole of any atrocity.
Well, I mean, we're certainly seeing that now as we look at what's happening, as we've talked about, what's happening with the refugees from Syria and people blindly following this idea that there are some people that just aren't as equal as others.
Right. It's Animal Farm. All animals are equal, and some are more equal than others. I mean, if you've never read Animal Farm, you got to go read Animal Farm. Like, there's never been a better time in history to read Orwell and specifically Animal Farm. So let's start from the beginning with the Paris attacks. We released our last episode the day after just because of timing. So we didn't get a chance in the last episode to talk about the Paris attacks and kind of go through the background of what exactly happened. We're going to hear more and more and more about refugees. I mean, Germany is taking in 1 million Syrians a year. Mm-hmm. And Syria, I believe, is a country that had 20 million people. And certainly that is not the case, as, you know, hundreds of thousands have been killed off in the battle with ISIS, between Assad and ISIS. I don't understand ISIS in their, obviously it is not a centralized, group like Al-Qaeda where it was top down. It is a little more disparate. And anybody, if you say you're an ISIS, I guess.
Well, it's kind of like anonymous in that way. It's a sure. decentralized mm-hmm. grouping of individuals, and really any one person can exemplify the entire group, as we're starting to see is happening in other aspects of our lives, not just terrorism or a hacking group or
you
something
first,
like that.
Yeah, you first heard about ISIS through this program, I'm sure, with the Black Flag of Khorasan and some of the articles that Greg has written for WeAreLibertarians.com. You can go back and hear about the formation of ISIS and a lot of different factors as we've talked about in past episodes, so we won't spend a ton of time on ISIS in and of itself. But I will say I don't understand, from their perspective, the shift into international terrorism, because what they have done is they have awoken the sleeping giant. And so now we have shifted single-handedly with one event from, man, somebody should do something about ISIS, to the world now needs to do something about ISIS. How fast can we make bombs? Neoconservatism is about to make a glorious comeback if you're watching your Facebook feed.
This week has been brutal online.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I've never hated Facebook more in my entire life.
Yeah. I mean, and because we have, over the last, through the Tea Party and some of these other, we have empowered the conservative idiots to speak their mind. And when you have no mind to speak of, it becomes very brutal for the rest of us to listen to you. I'm talking to you, Ben Carson voters.
You don't want a database of everybody?
No, I sure don't, you Trump voters.
You think there isn't one already?
Yeah.
we can unencrypt any encryption. Like, we had communications on one of the terrorist suspects' private phone that was a burner, and you think there isn't a list of Muslims in the United States?
Well,
are you serious?
We'll talk to Mr. Georgia later in the program about the data leak in Georgia, where 6.1 million people had their information leaked from the government because of a clerical error. You know, ISIS has expanded now into international terrorism. There have been a few stoppages at borders of Syrian nationals coming into the United States for whatever reason. ISIS has made various threats against the United States. And, you know, I feel uncomfortable saying, like, ISIS is doing this, ISIS is doing that, because I don't know the whole story. And it could just be some random dumbass on Twitter who has, you know, I love ISIS in his Twitter profile, and then Breitbart picks it up and says, ISIS is threatening New York City. And it could just be some dude on Twitter. Now,
ISIS found a poop swastika at University of Missouri.
Right. So it's really hard to just kind of skim headlines and know exactly what the truth is. So we're going to try and bring some balance and substance to you. Obviously, we here at We Are Libertarians do not. I personally do not love war, and I don't think that the way to solve this problem is by killing. The way to stop killing is to kill more people. I just don't think that makes any sense. But obviously, if you have been attacked, you do have to defend yourself in some manner. And so now we're going to, I think, over the next few months, spend some time talking about what is a reasonable response and what will be effective. So it is not that we here on the show, and specifically me, are completely, or we're not pacifists, but we're also not bloodthirsty. I want what works.
We're pragmatists.
Pragmatist.
Period.
And 9 times out of 10, bombing another country is not what works.
That's why France got attacked.
Exactly right. So, and it also makes no sense in my mind to take people who are fleeing war and denying them entry into your country, sending them back to their country where we can then bomb the shit out of those people. Like, that makes no, it's just mental gymnastics that I am not capable of.
And some of those gymnastics focus around the military-aged men. And you know what? I'm a military-aged male. I have absolutely zero military experience. I might, if you asked me to and pointed in the right direction, be able to fire a rifle in the correct direction.
Right.
But I certainly wouldn't be able to handle a lot of the things that compose modern warfare.
I will continue to eat a lot of Wendy's, and I will continue to take my anti-depression medicine, and that will ensure that I don't have to fight for my country. So, listen, soldiers are brave. I'm not brave. I'm a fucking coward. So,
Aaron Ewart has plenty of bravery for all of us.
Oh, so much
enough
bravery
for everyone.
Way more.
Everyone.
He can fight 10 ISISes.
So,
with his hands tied behind his back.
Absolutely.
So this is not just an isolated incident. This is the problem that we have. Well, some Muslims bombed Paris. And there was absolutely no reason that Paris was bombed. Nothing happened before that. And so now this is game on, the beginning of the story. There's always a behind-the-scenes story. And it's not like we're making excuses for ISIS. And I'm sure there are some Neanderthal, stupid-headed Ben Carson voters who just have not... And yes, I'm being very condescending, and I am being very rude, and I am being kind of an asshole, but that's just how it's going to be. I'm sorry.
I don't have a problem if you're informed but have a different worldview than I do. I have a huge issue and consider you someone who shouldn't be allowed to vote if you support Ben Carson and you think they hate our freedom.
Mm-hmm.
They hate our freedom so much because they're so against freedom that they're blowing up concerts.
It isn't like, and listen, ISIS wants to put people in camps. That is without a
doubt.
It's
one big camp.
Right. They want to make a big camp.
Hopefully it's a happy time camp.
That's their marketing. Okay. They have great marketing.
But then when Donald Trump and Ben Carson voters say we need to round up the Muslims and put them in a camp, that doesn't make any sense to me either.
Well, the reason that it doesn't make sense to me is what better breeding ground to recruit new members of whatever terrorist group there is than to take a specific group and suspend civil liberties, limit their freedom, round them up, have them in camps, and then expect that everything's going to be okay. No, that's going to be a breeding ground for people here in the United States that are sympathetic to a lot of the terrorist groups that are out there.
So what we are, just because we are anti-war, it does not mean that we are pro-ISIS. That is a very convenient way to dismiss the arguments of people that you disagree with.
That means all the Muslims in Lebanon that got blown up the same day, they're all pro-ISIS too.
Right. We are pro-policies that work. And we are looking at our recent history over the last 15 years of what has and has not worked. And we are at this moment because what we have done has not worked, so why would we double down on it? And so that's sort of what we'll be talking about today and for the next few months, I am sure. But I just want to get that out there and say, you know, sometimes you just have to... we're heading into an environment, those of us especially who lived in 2002, 3, and 4, in the wake of the Iraq War, we have a lot of younger listeners. And I was one of those people. There is video of me holding a pro-war rally, essentially, in 2003 that I have hidden on YouTube. I hide my shame. But it was a pro-soldier rally, and it did a lot of good morale building for people who were serving our country. And I'm proud of that moment. But it was born out of the idea that we can't have a pro-war rally. We've got to have a support the soldiers rally. And so if anybody opposes it, they're anti-soldier and they hate soldiers and they hate America, you know. And I have personally lived a life where I have made all of those arguments against anti-war people for years, you know, working in politics, going after people who were anti-war and attacking their character, smearing them. And then along the way, I really started to see the light and have shifted my views. And if we make you mad, if we are condescending and rude over the next few months, I'm sure that will happen. But stick with us. You will see the light, I promise, because we want what is best for you. I want what is best for me. I want what is best for my friends and my family. I want what is best for our nation at large. And I want also what is best for the people living in Syria.
That's
the
awful
people
paternalistic.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Check your patriarchy,
you,
huh?
But you know what my patriarchy is? Leaving everybody the fuck alone instead of planning out a society and nation building.
You and your freedom placement globally.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to plant the seeds of freedom with my bombs. So I'm going to make that statement up front. We are heading into a time where things are about to be very polarized, where pro-war and anti-war arguments are about to be very virulent, and it can be very contentious and very aggressive, and you will find people that you will no longer speak to. You will turn off this program because we don't agree with you, and I urge you not to do that. Do not buy into propaganda. There is nothing more powerful in a nation than pro-war propaganda, and sometimes it is so incredibly sneaky that you have no idea you're buying into it. And
make America great again.
Make America great again is a great example. You know, Barack Obama has done a good job of tricking his people into supporting global conflict. So, that being said, let's start with Paris. Let's start with what happened, because it happened on a weekend night.
Friday night.
There were not a lot of
Friday the 13th.
Yeah, there were not a lot of people here paying attention, so people probably don't have a lot of the details. So we go to our news correspondent, Mr. Greg Lenz, Mr. Pro-Hitler himself, to explain what happened.
See, you know, you just are willing to critically analyze and start from a blank slate, and you're immediately labeled pro-Hitler.
I'm just kidding.
Don't listen to his entire tirade he just gave. He's guilty of the exact same thing.
I'm inconsistent, if nothing else.
Yeah. So Friday the 13th, which was chosen strategically, historically, that is a terrible day, a day people are already suspicious in the U.S. It's never been good for the Knights Templar. It's always... been bad for them, the Catholic Church, which I did find quite funny that the Catholic Church is why it's known for slaughtering the Knights Templar and the men who loved science and reason, and then ISIS decided to slaughter the cultural center of the world in Paris, and there were attacks. What they actually ended up attacking was the and I'm going to butcher this, but the Bataclan Theater, where attackers killed 130 people, including 89 that were taken hostage, and there's a three-hour standoff with the police. In total, 368 people were injured, 80 to 90, and 80. Additionally to that, there were 80 to 99 were seriously injured in these attacks. Another one, there were three suicide bombings outside the Stade de France in Saint-Denis.
Where France and Germany were playing soccer.
Yep,
and the president was there. France had to be evacuated from the stadium after the first explosion.
Right. And then there are seven of the attackers actually died in that.
And one interesting thing about the stadium there was a suicide bomber who was turned away by a security guard, mm-hmm. and who happened to be Muslim and recognized that the guy was wearing a vest and was calling for help to point out this guy, and he fled. And that's what led to the detonations outside the stadium.
Yeah.
That's why they didn't make it in, was because they were already on high alert for these guys.
So you're telling me there's a Muslim that isn't pro-ISIS?
Apparently. Is that what you're
Well, yeah, there are some who support the Taliban, and then there are some who are Al-Qaeda.
That's what
yeah.
it was. Okay,
so
my fault.
There's Hamas and Hezbollah. But other than that, there are, yeah, you're yeah. Supporting some terrorist groups.
Yeah, so all in all, they attacked, you know, the media didn't really cover like why they chose it. So they attacked Paris. Paris is considered the cultural center of the world. They set the standards and the trends for the highest and elitist.
I think it has to be more than a coincidence that Holland was there, the French president.
Really?
I mean, yeah. It has to be more than a coincidence.
Yeah. No, they did. They're a small group, right? But they project a large force.
Right.
A large
like
image.
Anonymous.
Exactly. That's the best analogy I've heard in the first time I've heard that. So that is wonderful. They are a Muslim anonymous. that can be found in a swath of land between Syria and Iraq with a few oil refiner or fields. And then raining terror on everybody around.
And then a bunch of disaffected fanboys across the world who, you know, instead of being able to pick up women, pick up their Twitter account and start promoting ISIS.
Well, yeah, and that's what's misunderstood too, is that's what they're promised. So they're promised it's a place to come, be holy, have sex with tons of sex slaves, do drugs, live wildly with all these disenfranchised loser youth who are unemployed due to Europe's stagnant economy, that live in mainly Muslim communities where they still live with their families and are ostracized by their families for not being a productive member of society.
So it's not that unlike gangs here in America.
No different.
Nope.
Except they're doing it instead of the name of Christ. You know, that would be, not too many gangs, you know, go that far.
Right.
Other than the KKK. Right. But that's what they deal with. And so they target these individuals online and they target women. What do they need? They need sex slaves. They tell these women to come here. You'll find a husband. You'll have money, and you will be serving Allah. They become radicalized, and people miss that the difference between ISIS and Al Qaeda. Al Qaeda never wanted to set up a state. They were vehemently against it, and that's what caused the split between Al Qaeda and ISIS. Although now Al Qaeda is losing so badly, they sent their top emir to go meet with Jabhat al-Nusra and Baghdadi, E-M-I-R, to broker a resolution so they could join because they've caught all the momentum. That was probably the most missed news story last week. What you're looking, that's why they've adopted Al-Qaeda techniques. But so they hit Paris because what the West doesn't understand is that we are considered encroaching on their civilization. People call it a clash of civilizations, and to an extent it maybe is. But ever since the U.S. found out, or U.S. and their European allies found out there was oil in the Middle East and have begun intervening and, you know, bringing Western culture to the Middle East, they see themselves as victims. And that's what's so often missed in all this discussion. They have a way of life that their holy texts tell them to follow, and not to the fundamentalist extreme. Because Islam is not like, the Republican Party quite as much. You know, like, there isn't a book. I mean, you know, they're not going to make the Bible U.S. law. They'll try.
Well, there are some people that want to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They'll try. But so, that, like, ever since the Saeed Qutb, who wrote the book after coming to the United States and feeling that the West was encroaching on civilization while he was over here on a mission from the Egyptian government, he wrote the book that became Jihad. It became the playbook of Jihad. It influenced his brother, who was a professor that taught Osama bin Laden and Zawahiri, the two, you know, most influential Muslims in the world for the cause of Jihad. And they really feel victimized. And they have what Islam has two sects. It has Islam, and then it has Islamism. Islam is the religion they follow. It's going to the mosque on Sunday. It's praying five times a day. It's living their personal life. Islamism is about how to take those principles they're told in the Quran and turn it into political ideology. It's a full spectrum in Islamism. And various attempts have been made. The Muslim Brotherhood was the first try at trying to create a Sharia state in the modern world. That's what ended up spawning Al-Qaeda, which has spawned ISIS. And to think that just because someone follows Islam, that doesn't mean they want to create a state, enforce their will, and crucify people in public displays of dominance. And so if you look at that and you say, all right, so this person follows Islam. They don't necessarily want to create the Muslim party in the GOP or the Muslim, you know, in the parliament in London. That separates that individual from wanting to institute force over another. And that's the only way we're ever going to change the hearts and minds of the fundamentalists and win this thing. To think that you can blow up enough suicide bombers and they'll fear you, that they're just going to stop, right, is the height of stupidity.
Technology can't get that good that you can start reading people's minds and then blowing, like, up a single individual.
They live in fear of death every day. They wage jihad every day in a land where there are no rulers other than warlords. Mm-hmm. They go and invade hostile areas. They use an amphetamine that makes them feel invincible and keeps them up for 4 days on end that we outlawed in the United States, Katagon. And so these people are basically amped up zombies going and raiding villages like the barbarians. And to think that they're just going to stop because they got hit by a cruise missile when they walk into swords and walk into fire and feel
the percentage rate of getting killed that way is so small in their world compared to other ways of getting killed. And then secondly, it's a badge of honor.
Yeah. It guarantees them a glorious death and, you know, martyrdom. So,
and not only that, it's a great recruiter for their friends and family who just saw someone blown up in front of their eyes.
And they get financially taken care of.
Yep.
So, and people are missing, it's an economic opportunity is the reason ISIS is spread.
Which is the same reason that gangs exist here in the United States. It is a social structure that provides support to people who are disaffected by, in their case, it's not just local, it's also global disaffection. You know, here, gangs exist in lower income communities because it provides economic opportunity and social structure where little exists. You know, if you watch The House I Live In, you see in Detroit, in the wilds of Detroit, literally the only job opportunities are selling drugs. I mean, that's it. That's the economic opportunities that the government has engineered for those folks. And so that is why we have gangs, you know. And you can look at it and you could say, well, they should make a different choice, and you are 100% right. But never, ever, ever discount the fact that when you have a government that is as large and growing and paternalistic as ours, and you have social engineering, certain social outcomes will come to exist that and this is a perfect example of that. You know, we have been meddling in foreign affairs for so long, trying to create certain outcomes, and guess what? The outcome didn't work. It went the wrong way. It went the opposite way.
Right. Well, we were focused on intent. We had an idea of what we wanted to do,
right,
but we never focused on the outcomes. We were always focused on, well, that seems like a good idea, rather than let's play this out in some scenarios in our minds before we do it in reality and see what those consequences are going to be, what those outcomes are going to be, whether they are intended or unintended. They still happen because we were still too focused on intent rather than outcome.
And we've also done it to exploit natural resources in our nation's favor. And the American people love to hear, well, this is in our best interest as a nation. And then we can't figure out why disaffected populations around the world hate the United States of America. It's because we're exploiting what is theirs. I mean, if the Canadians, if and when they invade America to come in and start exploiting our resources, we said this all along. 98% of Canadians live on the American border, and we know why. If Canada invaded Indianapolis and started taking over our city council and started engineering our locals and state elections and telling us who was and was not a good person to work with, quote unquote, we're not choosing our own government, this nation of Canada is. And then they are killing our people. They are starving our people. They are easily blamed. And it's a direct correlation to what is happening in these Middle Eastern countries. We are the great Satan for a reason.
Well, you think about it. I mean, the French and the Germans drew up their maps. Literally, Sykes-Picot Treaty says, all right, you get... Here's a line, here's a line, here's a line. From the outside in, never been there. And then they talk about, you know, rights for, you know, like trade for colonial or like privilege for the colonies and then getting preferable trade agreements. And the point was for economic growth. Truthfully, it wasn't done for the worst of intentions. The idea was that economic growth brings countries together and it creates trade, creates opportunity, and it stops wars because all of a sudden you drop a bomb on Japan and Toyota's the best-selling car 50 years later in the United States. You know, these are the ideas of economic intertwinement, and they go back all the way to then. It goes back to a good example of what's going on right now and where Iran and Iraq were 60 years ago is Venezuela. So Venezuela, I forget which one it was, Rockefeller. Whatever the Rockefeller was, that had an Office of Interior American Affairs created for him. He was sent down, he had bought a company in New Jersey. They found the second most productive oil field in the world in Venezuela in the 50s. And he goes and gets a position on the Venezuelan board of the company. They cut a bad deal with the government. The people feel exploited. It's their resources. They're not making the money. They have a populist leader who wanted to take the money. And even though we disagree on, you know, the socialism and the Bernie feels thing, but, you know, he wanted to be able to spend that money to build his community for his country instead of seeing the profits go to a foreign corporation. Rockefeller hates it. There's a coup. And this is before the United States had started intervening in South America. He comes back here and creates an idea for how can we stop this rising tide of cultural Marxism? Che, Fidel Castro, all this is blowback from our intervention in oil flow. Then he decides, oh, you know what we're going to do? I know I can stop it. I'm going to create rural land grants for rural youth in South American countries. Well, then Che Guevara goes on a little motorcycle trip. Ends up being called the Motorcycle Diaries.
Mm-hmm.
You see the plight of the rural worker. They're not making enough money. They're exploited by the rich capitalists. That stokes a drive so strong in that man that he ends up helping Fidel Castro take Cuba. And to this day, he's glorified for being on the side of the people, even though he was a murderous dictator.
Yeah.
But that's the equivalent. That was where, right now, Venezuela and those exploited South American countries like Bolivia are Iraq in the 1910, 1920,
mm-hmm.
when the British find out there's oil mm-hmm. and they enlist us to help mount a coup. But listen, we're going to give you roads.
Right.
We are master road builders. Mm-hmm. And we are going to build you these beautiful roads and schools and yada, yada, yada. And women don't have to wear, you know, headdresses anymore. And you look up and you say, oh my God, what the heck? Even the best of intentions, look what we have now.
If you want to, I mean, look up the Shah of Iran. Yeah. And why we have the government in Iran that we have now. I mean, it's the United States and the British toppled the Shah of Iran in the 70s. And you, no, they, yeah, right? They yeah.
That's a movie with Ben Affleck.
Argo.
Argo, yeah. Yeah. So we toppled the Ayatollah Khomeini.
Mm-hmm.
He had to flee as a political political refugee.
Right.
Yeah. And that, you know, that time we installed the Shah of Iran, propped him up. He was he married a Western woman.
Yep.
And then they
wealthy man out of touch with the people.
He flew in his lunch daily on the Concorde from Paris.
Right.
That isn't going to go over well when you won't boost the food subsidy for the, you know, rural population.
Yeah.
So this spreads. And what ends up happening is they look for leadership. Who do they look for? Their old leader. Now their old leader's angry, and he's more fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
And when nothing works better in a power-hungry person's position than religion, because it's the great judgment over all of humanity. You know, it's, you know,
and you have a built-in audience.
Exactly, instant audience, and you have this. You need a threat anytime you need a threat, and religion is a God. If you ever need one, that's your one. That's why I have, you know, mandatory Catholic schooling for kids.
Yeah, and think about the social structure, and think about our society now. Where do social structures exist where you have tight communities, and religion is like number one? I mean, that's where you
build communities.
Yeah, it's really one of the few that you have left where people gather together weekly in person, and you have large collections of people that you can contact instantly. And that exists. That's the point of religion, not just the worship part, but also the social aspect of it. It gives us community, gives us meaning, and religion is a lot of community building.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in these areas where religion, predominantly Islam, is key, and it is socially unacceptable, and you're an outcast if you're not a part of the religion, if you're not going to services, if you're not part of the community, you've got the entire town going to one location at the same time. I mean, so if you compare it to where we're at now, it's hard. I don't know the name of any of my neighbors. I have probably 8 neighbors around me, and I don't know the name of any of them. And as Greg just witnessed, 2 of them are hot. So,
was a dog.
Right. Yeah. No, I actually tried to introduce myself to the stripper neighbor, and she just looked at me like I was disgusting and gross, which I am. But that's neither here nor there. So
podcasters are below strippers, apparently, on the social status hierarchy.
Apparently. I'm sorry. I have a podcast. Ugh. Well, that's sorry. I'm a stripper. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, God. So, anyways. Yeah. Community is... man, ideas are viruses. And just like an actual virus, the closer a community is, the quicker the virus will spread.
And that's what's happened, and that's how you heal it. You know, now, I'm not saying that if you wipe the floor, or like, you know, if you do what Russia has been doing this week, where they fired 100 Scud missiles and none of them missed, and they wiped out an entire village of 600 people to kill 35 ISIS fighters, I'm not saying that won't prevent... It won't cripple someone to the point they pull back, reorganize, and then become even more hardened and hateful and awful, which is hard to imagine.
But it's not surrender.
No, they don't surrender. It just prevents the inevitable clash, and it makes your future opponent even more dangerous. Because that's what Iraq was. We had a dictator, Shia majority, an elitist, that put down Sunni uprisings by slaughtering them. He also was our strategic ally, and we gave him nerve gas, and he used it on the Iranians, and he helped us, you know, win Operation Desert Storm. And then we, you know, H.W. Bush didn't want to pursue Saddam, or not Desert Storm, in the 80s against when Iran. But we have a situation now where, let's say we had Malaki, Iraq had a functioning democracy. Their army is no match, clearly. They've shown. They've thrown down their weapons and give the weapons to ISIS. We can't prevent this forever. And so saying that you want to hit someone so hard, you slaughter so many Muslims, that they are afraid to hit you back for right now until they become even more emboldened, what you're actually doing is playing into their hands. Because people don't realize ISIS's playbook, what their aim is to eliminate the gray space between Western civilization and Islam. They don't want people to be able to coexist. They want a clear decision to be made. They want to look at Muslims who choose not to support their cause and say, you are an infidel, you live amongst them, you do not love Allah, and you are the enemy. Or you support our cause and you wage jihad in stopping the encroachment of Western civilization upon us.
Very much like we're seeing with the dichotomy. Everything is either or. And it's... kind of like George W. Bush said, you're either with me or you're against me.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do with the refugees?
Well, first, we have to distinguish between refugees and asylum seekers.
Okay.
Because there are definitely different processes for both. A lot of people have claimed that the Sarnev brothers who were part of the Boston bombing were refugees, where they were not. They overstayed their visas, and as soon as that was discovered, then they applied for asylum, and they were granted it to stay here in the U.S. in 2002.
Okay.
So I think when you're looking at refugees...
Define a refugee and an asylum seeker. Define it for me.
Okay, so a refugee is somebody who's saying, look, I'm trying to leave my war-torn home to be resettled elsewhere.
Marco Rubio's parents.
Yes, except they knew where they wanted to go. Refugees are not allowed to pick where they are resettled.
Gotcha.
So essentially what they're saying is anywhere in the world other than where I am right now is better for me and my family. Regardless of age, regardless of income, anywhere in the world is better.
Right.
So essentially what we're saying is what are the places where refugees can go when you talk about refugees? Mm-hmm. So you have Germany that's going to take in 1 million people. They've agreed to take in 1 million people from Syria. You have other Western European countries that are saying, we'll take in this quota, we'll take in that quota.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, you don't have very many Middle Eastern countries that are saying, we'll take them in.
Sure.
You have individuals who are setting up islands to handle refugees. And then you have places like Saudi Arabia who could handle 1 million overnight in air-conditioned tents, and they're refusing entry for any of these refugees. They're not allowing any to be resettled there.
Right. They don't want the instability in their country.
Apparently.
Yeah.
That's what they say, but it all depends on your process.
Right.
So an asylum seeker is somebody who has either a political or... essentially a political reason for leaving the country. Mm-hmm. They're being persecuted. It is an immediate situation. They're going to a host nation and they're saying, I need your help to get me out of here and to stay there.
Gotcha.
So, and that's not quite the intense process because they have to prove that they have a reason for wanting to leave. It's somebody from North Korea. It's somebody from China. It's somebody from Venezuela or, you know, any of Middle Eastern or African nations.
But aren't both emergency situations?
They are and they aren't. There are some... As we've seen, some people are more equal than others. Mm. And asylum seekers are essentially a faster track to getting out, but they also get to pick where they go. Refugees are a little more desperate.
Gotcha.
They're saying, again, anywhere but here.
WikiLeaks guy.
Julian Assange.
Julian Assange, asylum seeker, not a refugee.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Edward Snowden, yep. Asylum seeker, not a refugee. Although his was a forced asylum issue because his passport was canceled while he was in the air.
Yeah.
He was a sovereign man.
Mm-hmm.
Very briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what is the process if you're a refugee for coming into the United States or a different country? You've got a fancy little infographic, Brad.
I do. Well, basically what these people have done is they've already left their homes in war-torn Syria. They've either lived in Turkey or Jordan or someplace nearby for months or even years. The United Nations...
In tent cities, essentially.
If they're lucky enough to have a tent.
Yes. Yeah.
In the desert. The UN essentially registers, interviews, and takes biometric data from them. And only those who pass those screenings are referred to the accepting nations, such as the US, Germany, some of the Western European countries. Then the accepting nation begins their process. So essentially you have the beginning... vetting that happens through the UN or through a foreign nation's embassy. They're all kind of put into happy camps while they wait the investigation of their registration, interview, biometric data, and those kind of things. All right, so then once they've done that, if they are chosen to be resettled in the U.S., then the U.S. begins health checks, biometric checks, and background screenings. They have trained agents to conduct in-person interviews. Now, these are the people that they've already had all this stuff done once, so this is a second layer. If they are cleared, they move on for screening through the Department of Defense, the Department of State, the FBI Terrorist Screening Center, the National Counterterrorism Center, and the Department of Homeland Security. They each have to clear each of these individuals before they can move on. So then they get a U.S.-specific DHS screening after they've been approved by all of those intelligence agencies. Those who pass all of the steps then join a wait list to enter the United States, and then they join communities in the U.S. Some of them are diverted to Connecticut rather than coming to Indiana. And in their particular case, they had applied for to be resettled in the U.S. when their five-year-old was just over a year old. So they spent about 3 years in this process of influx that is still better than their war-torn home in Syria because...
Death is not imminent.
Right. Because they've gotten out of it.
Right.
You know, they're not worried about being blown up in the middle of the night in the midst of their civil war because they're in a semi-safe environment. It may be a tent in the middle of the desert, but it is certainly safer than potentially having your entire home destroyed and lives lost.
Right. And I'm sure these camps are just full of nefarious people. You know, I mean, anytime you have a social gathering of people.
Well, and I'm sure it's not the happiest place on earth.
Yeah.
But, you know, you take a look at what you mentioned earlier with people being caught with Syrian documents trying to get into the Western Hemisphere.
Right.
Well, you had folks in Honduras. You had some in Turkey. Those aren't refugees. Those are people that are just using their normal documents to try to get somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
They're using their visas. They're students. They're traveling. They're tourists. They're trying to get out in a faster, easier method than somebody who's desperate to be anywhere but their home that was just blown up.
And, of course, anyone that is caught with Syrian documents now, Breitbart immediately labels them as a terrorist. Excuse me, Mittens, could you please get your ass off my microphone? Come on.
See how he treats immigrants?
Yeah.
Tried to come into a safe space, and he just tosses them out like Trump.
No, don't you backtalk me. So yeah, I mean, Breitbart and all these other, you know, the presidential candidates, Mittens, man, she is cuddly. Could you not be cuddly while I'm broadcasting to tens and tens of people? Come on. So I just laugh every time I see a story like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, your aunt Betsy. Really?
Or Aunt Donna.
No, Aunt Donna's dead to me. So anytime I have, you know, you always have your Aunt Becky, the diehard Carson supporter. Oh my God, Syrians, four Syrians were caught on the border. See, they're coming in to blow up the United States. It's like, no, they're not. They're just trying to get out of a country where their daughter will be raped. I mean, it's so stupid.
And we do, though, you do have to be... I think we do a disservice by not at least considering the other side and just dismissing them outright, right?
Mm-hmm.
People are fearful.
Yes. Fear is a tremendous motivator.
Right. And yeah, and we are living in a time right now where everyone is, you know, I even told you that there are certain, you know, friends we share that are sending me things about visions. And, you know, that's how fearful people are.
Right.
And in Paris, it was real.
Yeah.
And so they see that, and then immediately go back to the 9/11 mentality.
Yep.
And, we were making progress. And then there is the reality, too, where Syrian passports on the black market are worth their weight in gold.
Mm-hmm.
You take that to Germany, or you take that to one of the EU countries, you get additional benefits.
Now, one thing to note is the people that were involved in the issues or the attacks in Paris were EU nationals. They were residents, citizens of a country.
Hold on, Mittens just turned your mic off. Okay, go ahead.
These were EU nationals. They were a citizen of a nation within the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that you're seeing necessarily Syrians that are coming in that have come in just for this attack. These are people that have lived there for years and years and years. And for whatever reason are sympathetic or become radicalized and are participating in the acts of terror. What we're discussing when it comes to a refugee is somebody that is trying to escape everything that's happening, trying to essentially escape war, escape explosions daily, escape
persecution,
almost certain death and persecution because they are not a part of one side or the other.
Outside of religion, they are the Puritans coming to the United States in search of a better life.
Yep.
With the clothes on their backs. And
But they're willing to go through this three-year process that they're informed of before they begin.
Right.
As a chance to escape.
Right.
Right.
Right. And so they're desperate. They're willing to go through as much of a vetting and background process as they can possibly do in order to prove that they didn't shake the hand of a guy at their mosque that went on to mm-hmm. recruit for ISIS.
Right.
You know, that's the reality of the situation. And it's so difficult because there aren't centralized governments that can verify the records of the places these people are fleeing.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get the records, you have to bribe somebody. They don't have money because the currency's collapsed because there is no central leader. They're just really in limbo. And they're so desperate where you have, like in Turkey, where you had a Syrian, you know, the picture of the Syrian boy that washed up on shore, they'll do literally anything to escape.
Mm-hmm. In the same way that we see that people from Cuba will put together, they'll tie together water bottles mm-hmm. to build a raft to make it to Miami 90 miles away, hopefully.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And, you know, here we do have with, you know, depending upon, you know, where you're coming from, we receive you much better. But that's changing. You know, we are becoming very anti-immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
We are becoming very we're trying to legislate our past into a core and educating or instilling that into people and assimilating. And I you know, sometimes there's merit if it's a liberty, you know, as long as it's just, listen, if you're going to come here, you're not going to mess with other people. Like, if that were the beliefs we could instill into the people assimilating, that'd be wonderful. That's not necessarily what we're doing. You're never going to. But turning these people away, you're sending them back to ISIS, who does have resources.
And can you imagine if you were trying to come here, you were rejected, and you go back? Mm-hmm. Whose arms are you sent into?
Yeah, you're going to live.
Right.
You're
going to do what it takes to survive. You're not going to be a martyr.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, you come here, and so much of why they're fleeing, it all comes down to money and economics.
Mm-hmm.
People want a better future for their life and their family, and they have the courage to pick up and move out of a country. It's not like there aren't people who have nefarious reasons for coming to this country. There certainly are, you know...
They're here to have a suicide bombing, but there are
paths of lesser resistance that mm-hmm. they could but go down that we're talking about.
But how many are we talking about, really? Are we talking about 0.05% of the Syrian population? Are we talking about 1%? Certainly can't be more than 1% are terrorists.
No, it's just that you only need 3.
Right.
Or you only need 7, like in Paris, and that's the scary part. And so, though, you do, it's kind of a waste of time to say it's the political refugee who's the one that we need to watch. That is, it's...
Because we're accepting them with kindness.
ISIS isn't stupid.
Seeing. Yeah. Right.
ISIS isn't dumb. They're not going to say, oh, we're gonna use the political prisoner nobody wants that has no chance of getting in.
Right.
They're going to take the British-educated kid from an area where he's been radicalized, or a French, like in Marseille.
It sounds like you've watched Homeland.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, that's who they're going to target. Like a jihadi John, who's someone who has an American or a Western accent, would have very little difficulty getting through. And you would say, "Oh no, that's an upper class Pakistani individual, probably a general's son that was Oxford educated."
Mm-hmm.
He would come over here. He would get some kind of grant for studying from or being endorsed by his country, and then he would radicalize and train. And he would find the disaffected youth who are already here. He wouldn't necessarily have to bring them in from anywhere. You know, that is who you need to be watching, and that's who you need to be fearful of.
Are you saying that if we see something, we should say something, Greg?
No, I'm saying shoot first, ask questions later.
Well, in regards to most of these refugees, you bring them here, and immigrants bring a lot to our country, including small businesses and new markets to sell to, and
tax dollars
and a desire for economic
opportunity. Just had a $500,000 convenience store built right down the street from my house that's mm-hmm. immigrant owned and operated.
Yep. And why would we turn that away? Why would we turn that down? I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of...
Because we're scared, Chris.
Because of other than fear, there really is no other argument. And fear and shame are the worst two decision makers in our world. Any life decision that you're making, and if you're living in fear or if you're living in shame and you're making decisions based on those scripts, it's just, your life is a disaster. Trust me. I've learned the hard way. So we can apply that to politics, too. So, listen, could you tell the Craigslist people to call you later?
Yeah, Tyler Weiss is putting my picture up again, soliciting.
So we don't have a ton of time left in this episode, but...
You know, I think we all agree it isn't the issue... You know, it's not bumper sticker politics like you're seeing on social media and on the internet.
It's way more complicated
than that. It is. The refugees aren't the ones to punish for fleeing the people we... are trying to defeat, our government's trying to defeat.
Are you distracted by me taking a selfie of my cat?
Oh, is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I was taking a selfie of me.
I was like, oh, okay.
Sorry.
No, that's cool. I mean, you went to an internet cat festival.
Yeah,
I
I'm wearing a cat
shirt. Should
expect
these things.
She is all over me, bro.
I know, man.
It's the shirt.
I know.
She's digging it.
Look, you like that cat? You like that?
And... I wish I believed there was anywhere you could go and get your news other than doing your own research online of what is a win? There isn't even a definition. When you hear the president talk, when you hear leaders talk globally or on Fox News or MSNBC.
Well, because they haven't thought that far ahead. They aren't looking at outcomes. They're only looking at their intent.
Right.
And that continues to be the case. And when we focus on intent, we lose sight of the outcomes. You can't define a win. You can't define what is good, what is a good outcome, because you aren't looking that far ahead. You're looking at what you can do in the short term, what you intend to do with it. And that's all any decision is judged on, is
right.
what your intent is rather than what your outcomes are.
Because like Iraq was done with the best of intentions. It was to create a democracy, thinking the idea was that you could export it. It would grab hold. It would take hold, and you would have Sunnis and Shias be able to exist within a political structure where they could share power, and you would stop internecine warfare. That was not the case. We got ISIS.
And it continues to not be the case in the Middle East as we continue to further intervene. We continue to further our position as the great Satan because we've made it so that children are afraid to go outside on sunny days because they know that the drones can't fly when it's overcast.
Right. And granted, right now we're not quite seeing the Syrian people are really celebrating Russia and their effectiveness at airstrikes because, my God, that's impressive to shoot 100 Scud missiles and not miss. I mean, and I am one that, you know, you can fall victim to Putin as the great evil. You know, anytime the United States has an adversary, they play him up. He's Hitler, yada, yada, yada. He was on a forum at the United Nations last week. And he's the first person to expose that of the G20, many of them are responsible for buying the oil ISIS uses to fund itself. Mm-hmm. Does not get reported in an American media news outlet.
Did you find that in the BBC or BBC, Al Jazeera America? Because those are the two, when it comes to foreign affairs, those are two of the most unbiased sources that I've found.
Yeah, that, The Guardian's good.
Which is amazing considering that both of those are state-sponsored news agencies.
Yeah. I mean, they do, at least, even though they're socialists, they try to be good ones.
They try to report the news.
They do. And I read that, and I watched the YouTube video. It ended up being a seven-minute clip I posted in our private group, and I watched it. And Vladimir Putin was outstanding. He talked about how what we're dealing with, it's not like these are all true believers. You know, ISIS doesn't have fighters that are trying to, glorify Allah. These are mercenaries. Yeah. These are people that go to the highest bidder. ISIS is the highest bidder. And you want to know why the United States spent $500 million trying to train moderate, the good terrorists?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why is because they were mercenaries. That's why there were only five. That's where the money went. We hired mercenaries and got outbid. That is the state of the affairs there. It's being portrayed as a holy war. It's a battle for power with warlords.
And so stop giving them a reason to be hired.
Right. and even if...
giving them equipment to fight us with.
It literally comes down to just starving their resources by not giving them something to fight against and not giving them a rally cry to recruit with. I mean,
you're going to solve something that mercenaries are settling.
Right.
These aren't Syrians, wanting independence and wanting to set up a democracy and, or even like a Muslim Brotherhood-led Egyptian state. Like, they are fleeing and saying, whatever, I'll do whatever I have to survive. There isn't anyone crying for independence. And then no one's talking about the outcome of this. The reality is, you have two options. You support Russia. You coordinate with Russia. You coordinate after the three Chinese top executives for a rail company in Mali were just murdered in that hotel storming.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese are pissed because they don't like to deal with any of this stuff. They like to, we're going to build the new Silk Road, a modern Silk Road. We're going to have trade. We're going to control the trade routes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have time for your, men in the sky they can't see.
Right.
So you just killed three of theirs. They are livid. And as of today, the UK Independent reported that the Security Council is going to declare war, L5, on ISIS.
Hmm.
And radical jihadism. That is a huge mistake. Huge mistake. Especially, though, too, for ISIS. Because the Chinese, they run over their own people with tanks. Wait till you see what they do to an Islamic radical.
I just don't understand. I mean, not to give strategy advice to Islamic terrorists, but I don't understand why they opened up the international front. When their stated goals are a caliphate.
It's because you're looking at it through the framework of countries.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how they view this. They view it as Muslims versus humanity. So even though they're a global religion with citizens in every country in the world, they are trying to prompt an uprising no different than Karl Marx, like a workers of the world unite, Muslims of the world unite, that is inter-country. It is a whole different way. We're looking at it as their little territory, that's their little state, and we're going to bomb their little state. But they're trying to provoke the Muslim population to rise.
So I can see from a marketing standpoint, but from a strategic standpoint, when your stated goal is to build a caliphate and you're being pretty successful at what you're doing without you know, with limited interference from the international community coming in and bombing the shit out of you because you're killing brown people and not white people, I don't understand why you'd start killing white people, so white people start coming and killing more brown people. It's very simplistic, but that's kind of exactly what's happening.
Right, but for this, this gives them legitimacy first.
Okay.
Right now, they're losing.
They didn't have a 9/11 to point to as a victory.
They needed their they needed their legitimacy, and so once they had the Paris attack, then immediately Zawahiri announces that he's sending an emir to broker the peace talks between ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that's important is because Al-Qaeda is filled of the thinkers, the Islamic scholars.
Right.
ISIS is the rabid dog.
Mm-hmm.
The merger of these two can get the individuals, they think that if they, like Al-Qaeda has a network where it's the mosques, the mosque leaders. A top-down message united to the congregations in countries that are kind of hanging on the balance, like not in a third or a major, like United States, would that be possible? But in a place like Malaysia. The Uyghur territory in China, where they're, you know, they're sort of isolationist, or like the Chechenian territory in Russia, where there's a concentration of Muslims that will rally around a cause when it comes from top down, from the smart people, the intelligentsia, and then right there waiting for you with training, and on your side are the barbarians at the gate.
Right.
And so that's the way you have to view this. To think of it as this country's going to go around just, oh, now we got Syria, now we got Mali, now we got, you know, the annexing country after country like dominoes, it is never going to happen that way, and they know that.
Right.
It isn't a societal overthrow.
Mm-hmm. Good times. Sort of like what Brett Bittner's Bulldogs are going to do to Georgia Tech, the rambling wreck.
He got it right.
Yeah.
He did get it right. No, but that's next week.
I know what's going on.
Yeah.
Listen, I know that tonight they're retiring Rex, the Bulldog, and they're bringing in Toby. Rex. Toby the Bulldog. So
close. Russ.
Russ. Okay.
And Q.
Q. Okay.
Yes.
I met
going
the guy.
From Uga 9 to Uga 10.
I loved Q on Star
My
Trek.
Uga.
I loved Q on Star Trek. He'll be great as a bulldog. That's a good role for him. Met that guy once at PopCon. He was a real dick. So
don't hold back, Chris. Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, he was a dick. You know who else was a dick? The good looking blonde guy from Starship Troopers. Dick. So kids, we got to wrap it up. Well, let's talk about your Georgia thing.
Yeah.
I know you wanted to get this out. How about we make this part of your soapbox?
Okay,
so you can do self-promotion, and then you can talk about this and get this off your chest so people are aware of what happened. And because I want to keep it as close to 4 o'clock as I can, and we've done an hour and a half and given a lot of good information, unlike last week. So good episode, boys. So let's start with you. What happened in Georgia?
All right. So you alluded to it earlier with the database. They have a voter registration database that's managed by the Secretary of State that apparently they use an outside contractor for. They won't name the contractor that manages the data, but there are 12 entities within the state of Georgia that receive a disk every month from the Secretary of State's office that's updated with the latest voter registration information. Simple things like your name, your address, where you vote. How frequently you vote, it gives you history for the last 50 elections that took place. That's not 50 as in like every 4 years, 50. It's you have special elections that happen all the time throughout the state. You essentially have one every month or every other month in the state. So it only goes back about 5-6 years. In the disks that were given to these 12 entities, three of which are the political parties in Georgia. I was the recipient of this disc many times when I was the executive director for the Libertarian Party of Georgia there.
I received it here in Indiana. This is a very common thing that happens in almost every state. And so in Indiana, you have a public file, which is very limited information. And then you have the private file, which is $5,000, which has all the information, including some Social Security numbers. And that costs $5,000 just to limit access. But we would buy the file, and then we would sell it to like a company like Aristotle that did voter data. So I've handled the same file only here in Indiana, that version. And it had 6 million records in it.
So there was a disk that went out for the October update that went out at the beginning of November. that went to these 12 entities. 9 of them are private. I actually happen to know one of the guys personally that got, that's one of the other 9. My old office got one of the 3 that I didn't note there, that the one that the Libertarian Party is entitled to based on their status. And it contained the records of 6.1 million voters. But this time, instead of it just being the normal stuff, it included important information like driver's license numbers and Social Security numbers. And while this may not seem like a big issue if you're somebody who does not live in the state of Georgia or is not registered to vote there, those of us who no longer live there but were registered to vote, your data is never purged from the system unless you specifically request it.
Well, and that happens in every state. These rules happen. All 50 states have the same exact setup as Georgia. And the staffs that handle this data are, it's a third party generally that handles the data generation and security. And then it is handed out to, you know, half a dozen or to a dozen people.
All the people that want to pay the money to get it each month.
Subscription, yep.
And so there are 6.1 million people. I'm sure there are people in all 50 states that are affected. Mm-hmm. I am one of them. I registered to vote here in Indiana shortly after the 2014 midterms, as I was changing my driver's license and registering my cars and things like that here in Indiana.
And yet he didn't register Crystal.
Well,
I'm just saying.
He's a smart cookie.
Listen, you're making sure his woman doesn't vote. It's a good man.
Hey, she's more than able. So
that's an endorsement. Listen, honey, you are more than able.
So essentially what happens is, and I can, from personal experience, when I moved from Georgia and after college and returned to Georgia in 2007, I didn't have to re-register to vote. This is something that all I had to do was show up and say, hey, I want my voter registration data changed. I was still an active registered voter there. All I had to do was change my address. Mm-hmm. My driver's license, it was the exact same one that was given to me when I turned 15 and I took the learner's test and they issued me that first learner's permit. It never changed. It was always what it was.
Yeah, mine is 1160-. No, I'm just kidding.
I could actually tell you mine, at least from Georgia. But so now we have all this potentially, they say that they've retrieved or destroyed all 12 of the disks. However, they have no idea what happened to them outside the Secretary of State's office after they were mailed. They blamed it on a clerical error, and they let one person internally go in the Secretary of State's office thus far.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still curious. And one of the questions that's been raised in their response to why this data was included is because they do a similar poll for the Department of Revenue in the state of Georgia.
Oh.
And it's awful interesting that the Department of Revenue would want to know things about voter registration and voter records and mm-hmm. elections that they voted in.
Hmm. Well, keep all the information.
Right.
Keep it all together. That's what we need. Central databases on everybody.
I'm pretty sure that we had 2 presidential candidates that were looking to do that.
Yeah.
I'm just shocked the Americans don't think there is one. Like, that blows my mind. Yeah. Think about it. Facebook. That is a treasure trove of data where you pick your religious affiliation and you can read any status you've ever posted, and it's there forever, and the government has access to it anytime they want.
Right.
Why would they need to build their own database?
Exactly.
Pornhub traffic cookies.
Boom.
There you go.
Every man on the planet.
You know, God, people are stupid. I hate the American voter.
I hate literally everybody at this point. I'm 32. It's finally set in.
Not the people at the Cat Festival.
Well, a couple of people.
Really? See some Ben Carson supporters?
No, I saw I wish I had taken a picture of this guy. This guy was wearing, he had the grossest hair. He had like a multicolored, handcrafted, bespoke Etsy sweater on. He had on tight leggings that a yoga instructor would wear. I mean, he was a trip, man. So
wait a second. He had on leggings?
Yeah, he had on leggings.
With a sweater.
This guy had a fantastic ass.
So like,
yoga instructor level ass.
So you could see it, so it wasn't hanging low. Because according to what I saw on Fox News, that it has to come below the butt in order for them to be considered pants. Like the shirt or sweater or top.
They were like, I mean, he had like it, the jacket was like Sergeant Pepper jacket length.
So like a Nero
in
jacket?
The front. But no, it was like short. It's like a short jacket. I don't know. This guy, I just wanted to punch him in his face for being so affected. Greg?
Nothing. I'm really worked up about, I don't know why, but these calls for diversity initiatives and mm-hmm. the ouster of college presidents and censorship of speech by fedora wearing, scarf toting
kids that wear leggings to cat festivals.
Yeah, like that has me like wanting to just go around and dress as Hitler and walk on every bastion of liberalism in the United States, talking about how they're impure and putting them in fake little camps. Like, I am really upset that that's the trend, because that isn't going away. Like that, like they are there now. Wait till they are in office.
Yeah,
Hillary Clinton was a 1960s radical. Secretary of State, Senator, Bill Clinton. I mean, these kids on these campuses are the future leaders of America.
Yeah, and they're all morons.
Yes, and it's this, they're butthurt that they weren't alive when Selma happened. You know, they didn't get a march, so instead right. they go around outraged over everything they consider to be a microaggression out of guilt that they weren't down for the struggle because they were just a twinkle in their dad's eye.
Right.
Stop it.
But, you know, we've had leaders for generations try and put themselves in the civil rights movement. I mean, people who were like 10 when the civil rights movement, politicians would be like, and I marched in Selma.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you live.
And, you know, it really devalues the contributions of people like John Lewis,
yes.
the congressman from 100%. Atlanta, who was arrested numerous times mm-hmm. for his peaceful demonstrations. And
who was the
for freedom of speech?
Who right. just, what major figure from the civil rights movement just passed away? I think was it Julius? Oh gosh, no! Like he was head of the NAACP for Bond. Julian
yeah,
Bond.
Bond. Bond.
I mean that just an amazing human being, and yeah, you diminish, and that's sort of what we talked about last week with all this. What happens when you make when everything is a fake outrage, true outrage, become people stop listening to you. Nobody
the
gives
boy who
a
cried
shit.
Wolf.
Yeah, I mean it is just amazing how that story did not get read to children as you know these little children. So. Have you ever read Politically Incorrect Bedtime Stories?
Yes.
Mm-mm.
Go get that book. It's so funny, and read it to your kids. It's a scream. I also recommend Go the Fuck to Sleep.
Oh, that's great.
Read that.
That's
to
the
your
best
children.
Thing. Yeah. If you have to attend a baby shower and you have to bring a gift, that as a or, guy, that's the best thing. To do.
Or the audiobook as read by Samuel L. Jackson,
which I I'm going to Tux's and Tenny's tonight, a Rupert's Kids fundraiser, and I played Go the Fuck to Sleep for Rupert one time on the campaign trail in 2012. Never heard anyone howl with laughter more than he did.
It's beautiful.
It's so funny.
And the last thing I wanted to share was that thing Joe found on ISIS and a progressive having a conversation.
Uh-huh.
Did you end up reading that? It was beautiful. So ISIS is interviewed by a progressive liberal. And ISIS is saying, no, at the core of what we believe are our thoughts in the Quran. It goes, no, you don't understand. You're disenfranchised. You're not, you know, an active member in society. People don't appreciate you or apply the law equally. And so it's the entire case of an ISIS fighter trying to say, no, we're okay. We're Islamic. And the liberal saying, no, you're not. You're a victim. You need to find someone else to blame.
Right.
It's really beautiful comedy.
All right. Where can people find that?
I'll just end up putting it in the comments when we put the episode out.
Okay. On our Facebook
page. It is a great piece of comedy writing.
All right, kids. Look in your iTunes feed for a podcast called Room 616. That is going to be an abortion that will be going out probably about the same time as this. You have no idea how bad.
You're putting that out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Why?
Oh.
It was hilarious.
It was.
But we say...
Don't expect anything like this show, though.
No. Every Tuesday night, we're getting together and a group of local comedy people. I have a lot of funny friends, and we want to do something that is...
Well, people that think they're funny.
Not political. So if you like the comedy part, if you like the first 20 minutes of this show, you'll love the 20 minutes of that show. So if you like the rest of the show and don't like the first 20 minutes, you will not like that podcast. And if you like curse words, you will definitely... I mean, if you remember Storytime with Gina, it's a lot like that.
But funnier.
Yeah. I miss Gina. We got to see what Gina's up to. I was thinking about her today. Good old Gina.
I don't know. Last time she and Harry got triggered. Harry's blackness triggered her, and then her femaleness triggered Harry. Oh, double trigger.
We had a minority standoff. It's like my cats fight. All right, kids. Thanks for joining us here on We Are Libertarians. You are a beautiful audience, and our recorder died at some point, so I'm hoping we've got more than 39 minutes and 56 seconds of this show. So if you're listening and you've been listening for an hour and a half, congratulations. The recorder worked the way it's supposed to. All right, thanks for joining us here on We Are Libertarians. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.